Once again, television has given me a reason to live.
Good news, everyone. It's Talking Futurama. I'm your host, Sweet Lion of Zion, Bob Mackey, and this is the Talking Simpsons Patreon's holiday special. Who else is here with me today?
Henry Gilbert, and today's comedians could learn from this card.
And the episode we're doing of Futurama is Xmas Story.
Enough of your mindless chit-chat. Let's get going.
And this episode aired on December 19th, 1999, a little more than 18 years ago.
Wow.
And as always, Henry will tell us what was happening on this mythical day in the past.
Welcome to the world of tomorrow!
Oh, future boy, Bobby! Citizens of Earth are terrified about the Y2K bug. The city of Macau officially leaves Portuguese control and is returned to China. And just like the ocean under the moon, the number one song is Santana's Smooth.
Oh, God. That would not leave the radio. I think it's still on the radio.
Yeah, I think it was number one for like 6 months.
Let me tell you, moms came a-running to the smooth sounds of Santana in the 90s.
And also, this episode aired alongside two other Fox Animation holiday classics.
It was a great night.
Simpsons Grift of the Magi, which was about the school getting shut down, and then the Funzo episode
with Gary Coleman.
And that's hardly what I'd call it, Galaxy.
This phone isn't even connected.
And then King of the Hills, Hillennium.
That is so good. I love all of these episodes. What of them? I was there that night in the 90s.
I loved both those episodes. That his vision of the Tom Landry mole telling him to get used to the future is just beautiful. And him being crushed under the grandfather clock, like, ugh.
Yeah, they never really got that surreal again on King of the Hill outside of that one sequence, but man, that's a great episode.
He had to have a gas leak for them to do it. And it was also, I love the episodes that reverse situations, and that includes Hank being more paranoid than Dale was about something.
Yeah, it was all about the Y2K hysteria, and of course Dale is the guy who was the most into it. And then, like, I think a few episodes later he apologizes about Y2K.
Every show had a Y2K thing back then. The Simpsons a few months earlier did their Halloween special had a Y2K section.
That's right.
Family Guy had a Y2K episode that ended up in a Mad Max Destroyed Universe.
Do we need to explain what Y2K is to the kids? Because
there is a Y2K joke at the start of this episode,
one,
too. Yeah.
It was because computers, I guess there was... Okay, so I'm not a tech guy, even though I work with computers all the time and like video games. But there was something going on with computers in which they never figured out how to make them roll over 2000 correctly, which meant a lot of calculations were going to go wrong and catastrophes would happen and you have to buy bottled water 9 months ahead of time. And my family did not prepare.
My dad worked at a media company that has since been purchased 8 other times, but it was like an early cell phone company. I think it was Altel, maybe. David Altel. He told me they actually had built a bunker of, like, in case Y2K goes wrong, we've got oil generators here, we got all this stuff. And I was like, we dug a well. I'm like, wow, what do you guys know? It made me pretty worried as a 17-year-old young man watching this episode. So we're doing this episode of Futurama because it won our holiday episode voting quite handily, 48% of the 240-ish voters.
Yes, and this is my idea, Henry. No, I pitched it to Henry. Like, I love doing holiday episodes. I love doing Retronauts holiday episodes. I just like giving people lots of podcasts to listen to over the holidays because I have a lot of downtime, too.
Yep.
And what am I going to do, talk to loved ones?
No way.
Or go outside? Mm-mm. I'm going to bunker down with a video game and podcast, and I hope you're doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And this is one of my favorites. I mean, I would have liked to have done King of the Hills pretty dresses.
Me too.
But this is a great episode.
It is.
It also lets us practice doing a Futurama episode, which we'll likely do in the future, in the world of tomorrow.
It's likely going to happen.
And very likely, yes.
The episode, so the idea for this episode was one of the first things that Matt Groening and David X. Cohen came up with. Mm-hmm. I have to say, there are two distinct periods of Futurama for me, and I'm not talking about Fox and Comedy Central. I'm talking about, I feel like the first two seasons were really more about world building, and then they realized like, well, this limits the jokes we could tell. So after that, it was sort of like, well, anything goes, you can make up anything as something that happened in the past. But in this era, they were still like building the world, they were still like putting things into the background that they would explain later. There were things that never paid off, like people wore numbers based on their place in society, so they're background characters that are wearing numbers. So they clearly had a lot more in store for this world, but then they realized, like, well, this is limiting what we can do in terms of making a comedy show.
Yeah.
So I would have liked to see where they would have went with some of these stronger ideas and more of the world-building stuff, because I prefer the earlier seasons of Futurama, like 1 and 2, 2, 3 and 4 on Comedy Central and stuff like that.
See, I'm a little bit of the opposite. I liked when they went to Wacky Town.
Yeah, those were fun. I didn't hate them.
They spent a little too long in Wacky Town and got a little too wacky in the, I would say, especially... Bender's Game or the one right before that might be like, oh, this is too silly for me now. Or it was, I guess the term is flanderization. They kind of flanderized every character hardcore. But from the start of the show, I actually was more lukewarm on it in the first season. But I also think it was because they advertised it so fucking much.
They really did.
In the lead up to it.
Like, every joke in the first episode was given away by commercials. But
every single one.
I loved it. I loved the premiere, and I was like, this might overtake The Simpsons for me. That wasn't the case ever. I always liked Futurama, but The Simpsons was always number one. But I was there from the beginning, and I followed it up until I bought every one of the movies that are bad on DVD, and I followed it to Comedy Central, and I sort of lost interest. So I haven't seen, like, four seasons of it, but I was there day and date for every airing of every episode up until the Fox airing ended.
And the strengths that Futurama has over The Simpsons, and why the things that tickled me about it, were they were more obsessed with continuity.
Yeah.
It was a more linear show, not episodic and gag driven. Each one had there was a subtle continuity to it, including like some mysteries that then when you watch episodes back again, you're like, oh, well, Nibbler is not a dog. Like,
right.
And Leela's parents are mutants, and she's not an alien.
That factors into this one a lot, actually.
Yeah, and it kind of affects it on reviewing. While meanwhile, on The Simpsons, I like joking around and saying, boy, in this scene between Grandpa and Burns, I wonder if they remember that they were in the Hellfish together. But that was no plan by nobody. And
right.
I wonder if Matt Groening and David X. Cohen, they were just so used to like, well, The Simpsons plans nothing. We should plan everything. We should make up an entire alien language. We should have secret mysteries for every character that will even plug in to scenes in the first episode.
Yeah, that's amazing. The Nibbler thing in the first episode. That is there and was always there.
It was always planned.
And then when it paid off, I'm like, oh my God, I have to go back. And it was there. I was like, oh my God, they actually put this in.
But I do think that became limiting for them. And I think this episode has a number of things in it of like, oh, this is more of your idea of, well, what the character Fry is, he's a regular guy who is trying to explain the past, but poorly, and he's confused by this new world. While meanwhile, I would say even more so than Homer, Fry becomes stupider faster.
Yeah, I think it was like they ran out of fish out of water jokes, and then they said, well, just make him stupid so everything is weird to him and everything is inexplicable to Fry.
And he is the stupidest person.
And in fact, his stupidity is an asset later in the series where it protects him.
Him trying to eat that pineapple on a string. I was like, that's one of the funniest things about him.
They get a lot of good mileage out of it, but I feel like that is sort of, I don't know, one of the show's weaknesses. It's just like, I love Homer, but not every leading male character needs to be stupid, which is why I think King of the Hill is a great show and why I like The Critic too, where it's like Jay is a food monster who's driven by his vices, but he's also very smart and a Pulitzer Prize winner. He's not like, you know, a duh idiot.
I'd also like to compliment the show and rewatching. I was like, this seems like a clear choice by the creators of the show to be like, this should be more diverse. Like this should the cartoons weren't like that. The Simpsons family is all white people and all the main lead characters on show are white people, but at Planet Express you've got a Jamaican guy, you've got a Martian Asian, an Asian Martian,
that's true,
you've got
a lobster,
a lobster Jew, like you've got all
that's
these
true
great
there's
people.
A lot of Jewish jokes about Zoidberg.
What about Zoidberg? When I do that voice sometimes I'm like, is this offensive, is this, am I making fun of Jewish people? And though I didn't tape this show off TV, I actually, my Simpsons recordings were starting to slow down at this point. I would still catch every episode. I think it was the Behind the Music episode, Behind the Laughter, was the last one I taped.
Because Homer told you it was the last episode.
Yes. And I was like, well, don't need to care in season 14 then. But this one I didn't tape. I didn't have a separate tape for it. I was taping Space Ghost at the time and all that. But I did download the show off of Kazaa.
I remember that.
It always confused me when I was searching for like, have I downloaded every episode and seen them yet? Oh, what's this one called? Space Pilot 3000. It was always the first episode. I was just like, label it episode one. And, but yeah,
the pilot, the word pilot's in there.
I should have, yeah. I should have realized.
And I'd say, I mean, we were both animation aficionados, but going back to older digital shows, by older, I mean from the late 90s, early 2000s, mm-hmm. I will say nothing ages worse than early digital shows on an HDTV, because you are not looking at a picture of a drawing or a picture of a painting that's moving around. You're looking at a very low resolution image that mm-hmm. was never intended to be viewed anything other than 480i.
Yeah.
So this obviously looks dated based on like the line quality and things like that, but more than most digital shows I've seen from this era, it has held up pretty well. Like, mm-hmm. as much as I would love to see an HD remaster, it would never happen. It would be way too expensive, and the assets are all gone. But I think they did a good job of making this hold up, especially in terms of the limited use of 3D animation.
Futurama made the jump to digital way before The Simpsons did.
Yeah, like, yeah.
And it was kind of the test case for it. Rough Draft and Greg Vanzo and those people in Korea had been leading the way in animation. They're like, digital's where it's going. You're losing more ink and paper. People, I think I heard on 800 commentaries Al Jean say,
yeah,
we switched to digital because everybody was leaving ink and paint. We just couldn't do it anymore. Though Simpsons technically did go digital before Futurama aired with Radioactive Man, which is why it looks weird, the Radioactive Man movie episode.
It was their one test case, mm-hmm. which looked pretty good for 1995, but I would not have liked to see the show look like that from that point onwards.
No, yeah. And so this episode, Xmas Story, was written by David X. Cohen, one of the few he has the full writing credit on, the co-creator of the show with Matt Groening. And I think that's also another special thing about Futurama compared to The Simpsons. David X. Cohen ran the show every time they made it.
Yeah, like, and if you hear the commentaries... And if you hear the commentaries, he was not very happy at the beginning. In fact, I think he stormed out one day, and he was no longer the showrunner for a brief period of time.
Whoa, yeah. I missed that.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back, I think it's on the season one, where like a writer is talking about, like, oh, when I joined the show, you were leaving the show. So I think maybe it was just a lot of work to get a show off the ground. And it was fun to hear from Mike Scully that if Mike Scully did not take over The Simpsons in season 9, David X. Cohen probably would have been the showrunner. And I yeah. can't imagine, like, what would that era even look like?
Yeah, that was amazing to hear in our Scully interview that, like, I didn't know those two were so cooperative because they never had a co-writing credit together.
Yeah.
And they separated pretty soon after their relationship, professional relationship started. But yeah, I can't. This show feels like the David Cohen show. Like, I'd say the most Futurama-y episode of The Simpsons before Futurama started would be this David S. Cohen segment, Homer Squared of
right.
Treehouse of Horror. Like, I think that was so math-heavy and dorky, and that's what fits him too. Like, I don't think he would have fit in as much in just the straight gags of The Simpsons that don't need a science degree to explain to you. You know?
Yes, he does have a PhD, I think, as we've said before.
Yeah, and then went to Beavis and Butthead. So
I should have got a master's degree and then went to Beavis and Butthead. It could have happened.
In this episode, Xmas Story, for some reason, Fox hated this episode.
And the next one even more.
Even more so. Deep yeah. Too Violent to Air, which is just like 3 years later, 5 years later, they are airing some dirty-ass shit of Family Guy and American Dad, all this stuff on there. But apparently in this one, they're just like, if a robot Santa Claus shoots a rocket launcher, like, it'll destroy children.
And it should be noted that this show always had a rocky relationship with Fox. The Matt Groening connection is the only thing that kept it on the air more than a year. Like, it was always being moved around, always being preempted mm-hmm. by football. It was moved to this, like, Tuesday death zone with all the animated programs for, like, 6 months. It just, like, it never found a good home mm-hmm. outside of the first, like, year and a half, I think.
If they didn't want to stay friendly with Matt Groening, they wouldn't have kept it going. And this is also made outside of the Gracie machine, which probably, like, we've heard a number of stories of, you know, good and bad times between Matt Groening and James L. Brooks and his company, Gracie Films, you know? And so this was him kind of going off on his own, as he is also doing with Netflix and Disenchantment, which seems like the next step in his... He did Simpsons, Futurama. This is his next step. But this episode, the sequel episode, they sat on for a year. Didn't air it for a year because, like, it's too violent.
Too dangerous for children.
it's crazy.
Yes. So let's get into this episode. It starts off in the Catskills, and we have an old friend joining us.
People are getting pretty worried about this Y2K problem, huh?
No! They fixed that 900 years ago!
Just bear with me, sir. Anyway... I'm walking to work this morning.
I doubt it.
Listen, pal, I may have lost my freakishly long legs in the war of 2012, but I've still got something you'll never have, a soul. And freckles. Well, I'm out of material. You can catch me next week at the Andromeda Chuckle Hut. Enjoy your breakfast.
So one thing I noticed, thanks to the wiki. So before we before we do any of these episodes, I read like every wiki entry. I read every online review. And one of the visual jokes I didn't notice until now is that Conan has a giant head that is so big it's coming out of the tank. And I guess that's just the thing about Conan O'Brien I wasn't aware of. He's got a giant head.
I can think back to his self-deprecating humor, and he often will talk about his freakish nature, right, including his giant head. But I never noticed it until I read that entry too, that I was like, oh yeah, all these other actors, their heads just fit normally in the water, but his is above it.
And when the guy carries him off stage, he just leaves a trail of like the tube slime behind, or the jar slime behind.
It's so ignoble what happens to Conan in this. And I also love that the joke is that he has not changed his comedy in 1,000 years. Like, he has done the same act.
Farnsworth calls it the moldy old comedy of Conan O'Brien later. But it's funny that, okay, this is a future show, but they cannot get away from like vaudeville style things, because they're in the Catskills, which is where, you know, Jewish people went to vacation in New York. And that's where this great comedy circuit started, where these Jewish performers could not perform anywhere else, or they had to change their name. So
Borscht Belt.
The Borscht Belt, yeah. So we're getting a Borscht Belt jokes in the future. Which is great.
This also has a feel of such an earlier episode of this show, because it starts out with the idea of like, well, what if you went skiing in the future? What's that? Like, it's a simple start, though, for a show that loves to give context to everything. I was shocked that there's not even a line of like, I'm so glad you took us on this vacation here, or we made a delivery to the Catskills and now we get to have a vacation. Yeah. Never say anything.
It seems weird to see them just living it up at this resort when they usually are just miserable and making no money, and Farnsworth is sending them to die.
Yeah.
But yeah, the beginning of this episode is just like, it reminds me of the little cartoon in the margins of Mad Magazine. It's like, here are 20 jokes about doing things in the snow, like rapid fire.
Yeah, just to get it before it gets all Christmassy. And hearing that first clip we play there, just hearing John DiMaggio make noises is just so funny. You can see why they fell in love with him.
I love his scatting later in this episode. He's so great at just doing random noises in improv.
And like, DiMaggio can never go too big. They're just like, nope, bigger, bigger.
Louder and sadder.
This is a talkie. Just walk around, make noise. The joke, too, that Max Weinberg had died. He would lead the band on Conan shows until the TBS show in 2010. He was like, nah, I can't. I think they just couldn't afford Max Weinberg anymore.
That's probably right. And so the war Conan's referring to in 2012 that happened 5 years ago, was that the late night war when he lost to Jay Leno?
Oh, man.
I think that was closer to 2010.
That was the 2010 war.
Yeah,
yes,
but
it
is weird in Futurama now, they're referencing dates that already happened that weren't current dates when the show was made.
I think they knew that day would come someday, but it is pretty funny. It was also funny to see when they came back on Comedy Central that they had to do jokes that would undo history from previous jokes to be like, well, no, this new science came out, so we have to say that. Also, then we get a gag about global warming and that nuclear winter wiped it out, which I wonder if that nuclear winter happened at one of the times. That's such an easy gag in the first episode where Fry is frozen and they destroy the world and build it back up and destroy the world again and build it back up. I wonder if that was one of those times is the nuclear winter.
It could have been.
And that's in this history, it kind of confuses the thing. Like, oh, at some point in history, at the very least, New York was destroyed by aliens twice. And that's not really reflected in any of the history in the show.
I wonder if there's a secret Catskills underneath the Catskills that they're in now. That's my fan theory. So they decide to go skiing, and they notice things are very different in the future.
Look out! We're heading straight for those trees!
Yeah, relax. Trees down.
Trees down.
Cool. Hey, what do you do if you want the trees up?
Trees up.
Trees down.
Trees down.
They make a big deal about saying there are no fir trees left, but they planted a lot of these robot trees on this mountain.
That's true. They kind of have to get around that. But
for the sake of one gag where they're chopping down a palm tree for Christmas.
Well, they just like having palm trees for Christmas, just a visual of the entire episode. But the Fry getting hurt is very funny. I'm with you, Bob. You've said this before. Billy West is great as everybody but Fry. I just don't love him as Fry. But when Fry gets hurt, he's really good at that.
Yeah. I think ultimately this is like 20 years too late to say this, but they should have cast a younger person.
Yeah.
And I think the problem with producers of animated shows is they fall in love with these people they work with a lot, so they get overcast. Like, one of the reasons I think Mission Hill could have been better is, like, man, does Tom Kenny need to be in everything at this point in time?
Yeah, I know.
And I feel like, even, like, I love Tress McNeil, but she has so many characters in Futurama, too, just like Billy West.
It's a budget thing, too. If you're going to cast as a regular in it, a lot can't just be one voice. I think Leela is the Yardley Smith of the show.
Yeah, like, that's basically, Katie Sagal.
Katie Sagal
only does Leela.
I also just like trees down, smash. And then Bender laughing at Fry. It's an important thing of Bender is that he has no heart of gold. Like, Bender's an asshole. He's just always an asshole who sort of cares about Fry sometimes.
Out of convenience, mostly.
Yes. I love when Fry in another episode is crying about Bender and says, "And one time he actually tried to steal my blood, but I wish Bender was back."
Well, we hear about him stealing blood in this episode.
Yeah, see, some guys stealing blood.
Yeah. And, of course, it's 1999. It's never too late for a Cool Runnings reference.
No way.
"You a bobsledder? That I'd like to see."
"Listen, you filthy crab. 1,000 years ago, there was a legendary team of Jamaican bobsledders."
"Yep. I remember. They came in last at the Olympics, then retired to promote alcoholic beverages."
"A true inspiration for the children."
I'm sure they were promoting Red Stripe beer.
Actually, I have the commercial, Bob.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Yes, this is the one clip I found for this episode, but it is that they were the team in 88. In 89, one of the members of the team would then do a commercial for Miller Lite.
Oh, not even Red Stripe, the Jamaican beer?
Well, no, Miller Lite probably was offering more money, I would think.
John Candy must be rolling in his grave. Let's hear the clip.
"People keep asking me how it felt to be in the first Jamaican bobsled team. Well, let me tell you, man, it was cold. Freezing. See, coming from Jamaica, the only thing I like cold is Miller Lite. Like, not some watered-down version of your regular beer. It's a less filling beer that really tastes great. Now, let me tell you, man, Jamaican bobsledders will be ready in 92. Keep training us. Going for the gold next time."
This ad.
"Believe when it's Miller Lite, less filling tastes great."
So the rest of his team was locked in a freezer.
They like pre-steal a joke from Cool Run, or Cool Running stole that joke from that beer commercial. Like, that same gag is in the movie where John Candy puts them in a freezer to get them ready for being cold.
I guess I was a child, but I didn't realize they were on the map before Cool Runnings.
Mm-hmm.
And I know whatever person wrote that commercial, they were like, "You have to say Mon at least twice because you are Jamaican."
And this episode, too, shows how Futurama is always better at Simpsons with realistic violence.
Like,
the slow turn of Hermes to then basically be on his head and breaking his neck as flying down the
and
thing.
And I love Zoidberg scuttling over and then falling down the track, and then Fry decides just to do it because everyone else did. The
it's
animation,
the rule of three. He knows it.
There is great, great animation in these snow fun scenes, including the professor sleeping while skiing and doing this amazing trick in the sky where there's like a lens flare in front of the camera. Like, that looks so good.
That's beautiful. I also love the gag of, I want to think that Bender definitely killed those children.
Yes.
He fell into the ice. And that it's too bad they couldn't actually get Christmas Time Is Here. It's clearly a like three notes off version.
It was a good approximation.
But there was one kid who was Pigpen in there, who was
definitely
very dusty. Yeah. And I got to say, even this early, the writers are so horned up for Amy. Like,
they really are.
It got, honestly, at times in the later seasons, one of the worst things about it was just like, it'll be funny if Amy was in her underwear, right? That'd be really funny. What if Amy and Leela were naked in a tent together while they were waiting for Bigfoot? Like, what's the point of that? Other
you could
than
say,
to give people boners?
You could say it's progressive to have a sexually aggressive female character for once, but I feel like it was for the benefit of men for the most part.
No, her character wanting to have casual sex, like, that I was fine with. It was more like in other episodes of, you guys just drew your own fan art.
Yeah.
Like, I can see a million drawings of Amy and Leela kissing. Why did you have to imply it in an episode? Or that was one of the, in the first movie back, when one of the first places they go is the nudist planet, I was like, absolutely fan service. You're like,
that's why you buy those DVDs.
Thanks for sticking with us so long. You'll get to see Leela's butt in HD.
So Fry finds out that Christmas is much different and deadlier in the future.
Nothing like a warm fire and a super soaker of fine cognac.
Yeah, it really puts you in the Christmas spirit.
Whatmas?
Christmas. You know, X-M-A-S.
Oh, you mean Xmas. You must be using an archaic pronunciation, like when you say ask instead of axe.
Xmas, huh? You know, this will be my first Xmas away from home.
Hey, hey, let me ax you something. Would it cheer you up if we went and cut down an Xmas tree?
Yeah, an old-fashioned Xmas tree. Hey, these aren't Xmas trees. Holla. They're supposed to be some kind of, you know, pine tree.
Pine trees have been extinct for 800 years, Fry. Gone the way of the poodle and your primitive notions of modesty. Brisk.
I jumped the gun here. We don't learn that Christmas is deadly until later in the show. Mm-hmm. But we do learn that fir trees are extinct and the professor loves getting naked.
Yeah, and that, though, I'm going to have to say, discontinuity alert.
Oh, no.
In a previous episode to this, Leela, when trying to pretend to talk like Fry, says X, implying that Fry talks like that all the time. But now the reverse is true, that Fry says ask, while meanwhile everybody in the future says axe.
That was a great joke to piss off pedants about language, and part of me wishes they would have kept that for the rest of the series, as distracting as it would be to have every character say axe.
Yeah, it would have been too distracting, but
it comes up one more time in this episode, though, at least.
That's why I don't mean to... that's why I don't mind being a pedant about this, because the show is made by pedants who... they're the continuity dorks, like... You know, David X. Cohen was one of those guys too, and that's why he tries to make everything like waterproof, pretty much, of just like, no, there's no holes in this. Like, it all makes sense in continuity. Farnsworth stripping is great. Like, this was reverse fan service.
Yes.
And just the extra way he just like lounges around and just like, he's like, oh, poor Fry, and puts his arm around him.
Up to him, yeah.
And Fry doesn't mind.
No, I think he might be used to it at this point. I do love the joke about Fry's talking about what he misses, goose burgers and eggnog made from bourbon and ice cubes.
Yes,
I would prefer that to actual eggnog. I think eggnog, I can do like one cup a year, but at some point I'm just like, why don't I just drink the bourbon instead?
Yeah, just bourbon on the rocks.
Yeah.
Just to have that.
Ooh, it's
like,
so tasty.
Why drink pancake mix with bourbon in it?
That's like, a good way to put it.
Yeah, I'm probably stealing a joke from somebody. I also love the visual gag of Leela cutting down the tree by holding what is an axe, but a laser just comes out of the hilt. And
it makes no sense, but I love the mislead where it's like she's raising the axe and then the laser comes out of the bottom. It's like, why does the blade there to begin with? But it's a great joke. And so everyone is getting their Xmas cards in the mail.
Every Christmas, my mom would get a fresh goose for goose burgers, and my dad would whip up his special eggnog out of bourbon and ice cubes. This dumb holiday just makes me think of all the things I left behind. Let's just stop talking about Xmas.
Happy Xmas, Xmas people! Xmas cards have arrived! Xmas! Amy, there you go. Fry, Professor, Zoidberg, a mighty haul for Bender.
Yes, I got the most! I win Xmas!
And last but not least, the sweet flower of the office... me, Hermes Conrad.
Those are my favorite Futurama jokes, quite honestly, where...
they're really on-the-nose ones.
So yes. On-the-nose, and that a character refuses to notice obvious feelings and talks in a way no normal human would ever talk, but to make the joke better.
That's a very Futurama trademark, I think, that they would often overdo, but I like this one a lot.
I normally love all of them, but just the, like... Xmas, everyone! Xmas!
Yes, and there is a math joke snuck into this scene.
God damn it.
Yes, did you get this?
No, I did not.
I found it.
Is it the card for...
Yes.
Okay, so...
So, yeah, Bender gets a card from his mom, who is just a giant robot arm, and it says, Happy Xmas, son, 1729. And I don't know what this means, but I copied it from Wikipedia. 1729 is the Hardy-Ramanujan number. It is the smallest number expressible as the sum of two cubes in two different ways. I have 2 degrees in reading. I don't know anything about math, so tell me what that means.
Yes, one of you nerds out there, tell us about that. I knew with all those numbers, I was like, if I know Futurama, this is an extra joke in here.
Ken Keeler has a PhD in, I think, applied mathematics or whatever. So every number you see in the show has to mean something to someone.
Yeah. It's an extra dork on top of Cohen. Cohen's dorky enough, but they're like, no, we got an extra dork here.
Bring in Keeler.
Well, meanwhile, Lou Morton is just like, I'm funny. Like, I like Lou Morton, and especially him on commentaries, because they all sound like the dorkiest dorks of Dorktown, which, as someone with a very strapping and cool voice, I like listening to.
It makes the Simpsons commentary seem like a bunch of jocks,
frankly,
with the ones with Al Jean.
I also like the joke about, I like Zoidberg and Zoidfarb, but... this is a big change or a problem in this episode in rewatching that, like, Zoidberg isn't exactly the Zoidberg we know. He doesn't live in a garbage can. He isn't hated by everyone. He actually gets a card. That joke about Leela being the saddest, it's like they couldn't even do that later because, like, no, Zoidberg's the saddest.
He has to be the saddest, yeah.
Like, oh, nobody likes Zoidberg. And, yeah, it's also weird, like I said earlier, weird to watch this episode that kind of deals with the mystery of Leela, who they think is an alien nobody's seen before. And when we know that she is a mutant, like she is a the best looking mutant in the world. And
I love her book of somehow she has a photo op of her most tragic moments. But when she closes the book, it's called Happy Memories.
I do love that. That's a great extra gag. And same with the single tear falling in the middle instead of the sides.
I realized that was a gag, too, on this viewing. I don't think I caught that before.
Yes. And so then we get to see that both Fry and Leela are quite sad at Christmas.
Hey, Leela, how about a little sympathy here, huh? Yikes. What was that about?
Fla? She's an orphan.
Yes, and the only one of her species in all the known universe. What a lonely life.
My God, poor Leela.
Hey, buddy. Heard you needed cheering up. Well, old Bender will make you laugh. Look at me, look. Boo-da-boo, dee-da-boo. Oh, man, I got to work on my act.
Great act break. Yeah, I love John DiMaggio's Bender. I always love when you hear a not cartoon. I mean, it is a cartoony voice, but it doesn't sound like a cartoon voice actor. I always love having that kind of presence in a show.
Yeah, he's great. He is a comedian being silly, not a Tom Kenny type who is just like, yeah, it's the voice I always hear. You know?
Futurama basically made him a voice actor. I believe he was on Chicago Hope before this or one of those shows. Yeah. And then he went on from this to do like Final Fantasy X. He played Waka and obviously Adventure Time and everything like that. He's been in so much. I think he is just a voice actor now.
Pretty much. I mean, he's such a voice actor, he made a film about being a voice actor.
Oh, right. Like, is it called I Know That Voice?
I Know That Voice. Yeah. A nice little film if you've ever wanted to see what voice actors look like. And Bob and I are a little too knowledgeable about the practice that it was a lot of stuff like, yeah, I knew this. I knew that video game voice actors are fucked. Like, I know that. Like,
they're still fucked.
And then we hear about Fry calling somebody as lonely as a frog, which is quite odd.
He's whining like a pig.
And I also like the animation of the professor being blind, that like just it goes a little too long of him just looking around like, whoa.
And Fry's like on the couch raising his finger like, no, right here. And so we hear a Christmas report from our friends Morbo and Linda.
The holiday season is a time of celebration for most, but it is also a time to remember the tragic suffering of the less fortunate.
Earthlings do not yet know the meaning of suffering.
Earlier today, I visited a shelter for down-and-out robots. Homeless robots, too poor to afford even the basic alcohol they need to fuel their circuits. Is there anything sadder? Only drowning puppies, and there would have to be a lot of them.
Where are you going, Bender?
To volunteer at a liquor kitchen for homeless robots.
Yeah, right. As if you ever did anything charitable.
I'm very generous. What about that time I gave blood?
Whose blood?
Some guy's.
Yes, I don't have a ton of Futurama lines in my head, but that line about drowning puppies is definitely something I think about a lot.
There have to be a lot.
A lot of them, yes.
Yes, that they also have to set up, in case you're a first-time viewer, robots run on alcohol. They do not eat. They don't eat food, though then they do serve food to robots at the end of this episode. But they don't eat food, and they only become drunk when they don't drink. And so that's why hobos who aren't getting enough alcohol, And that just the sounds in this episode, the sound Foley work when you hear liquid go into a robot is so great and diverse. They have so many different versions of it.
And I'm just listening to the music again, and the music is great, especially in the action scenes. Yeah. It's really intense and way different than The Simpsons.
Morbo and Linda are an underrated comedy duo on the show, too. I really like Morbo and Lur are the same person. Like,
they really are.
No offense to Maurice LaMarche. She's great.
I'm glad they got him for the show.
Yeah.
For sure.
And Linda's one of Tress's best voices on the show. I think Mom is easily her best character. Like,
God, if only Doris Grau had survived, I think she could be Mom.
Yeah. Well, I mean, wouldn't it be awesome if Zap Brannigan was Phil Hartman?
Oh, so many could have. So. Yeah. Fry finally learns about the current Santa Claus in the year 3000.
Just be back by sundown, man.
We'll see. I like to haggle.
You can't stay out on Xmas Eve. You'll be killed.
Say what?
Good Lord. He doesn't know about Santa Claus.
I know about Santa Claus.
Wink.
Back in 2801, the Friendly Robot Company built a robotic Santa to determine who'd been naughty and who'd been nice and distribute presents accordingly. But something went wrong.
Wow, 2801. Anyway,
wait, you fool! Due to a programming error, Santa's standards were set too high, and he invariably judges everyone to be naughty.
If he catches you after dark, he'll chop off your head and stuff your neck full of toys from his sack of horrors.
Sack full of horrors.
Quite a scary sack, since it's the easy jokes. But look, I love Fry's wink, like, I know about Santa Claus. Wink, like, he's like, I'm not stupid. I know Santa isn't real.
And he pulls the exact wrong piece of information out of that entire story.
I love that. Wow, 2801.
Well, see ya.
he's getting to be almost season three stupid with that line. Okay, so this is one issue I have with this episode, is that the threat of Santa Claus never really feels anything to me, because he can't be violent enough. And I think probably because they had to be held back on some of the violence, which, if you watch some of the Comedy Central episodes, like, blood and gore is everywhere. They did not skimp on
that is true
stuff. And I think they wanted to be more violent and make Santa more of a threat, but he's kind of defanged a little bit, so it doesn't work totally for me. It also is why the sequel episode works better, because Bender is so much clearly eviler than Santa that he's actually a better evil Santa.
I think it's a better story, and this is a weird qualm to have with the origin of Robot Santa, but I wish there was more of an explanation. It's just like, well, why would you create a Robot Santa? That infers that actual Santa is real, and you're trying to replace him. Is there some, like, was it for, like, a department store? Like, why was he, I want to know.
Did Santa Claus die and then put a robot in his place? Like, and also, in a world where Hanukkah zombie really does exist,
and not Kwanzaa
a robot. Well, Kwanzaa-bot's a robot, so I can.
I
can agree. Kwanzaa-bot is a robot, so he was built in the same way Santa Claus exists. Hanukkah zombie is just a zombie. Like, he's not. And also, there's a zombie Jesus too, or at least the exclamation about him,
which was censored on Cartoon Network in its first airing.
Unbelievable.
Too spicy for Ted Turner.
Sweet zombie.
Yeah, not even a beep, just nothing.
Yep, just silence.
So Bender, it turns out he's not going to the homeless shelter to help out. He's going there for free booze.
Like, obviously he was stealing. Like, yes. There's no way he wasn't stealing.
And we meet the immortal Tinny Tim.
Oh, yeah. You filthy hobos sure know how to live. Hey, Chief, someone's stealing your handkerchief full of crap.
Excuse me, sir. Might I have a sip of booze?
I'm sorry, Tinny Tim. Seems we ran out early tonight.
I understand.
My God, that poor kid.
That's great. Again,
laughing at misfortune.
We're asking a lot of questions about this universe, and the writers ask these same questions, but, like, why would you make a disabled child robot?
Well, I also like that a hobo robot was built
with a bindle?
With a bindle attached to his shoulder, like, attached in creation. I love that.
With, like, a built-in, like, derby, too, attached to the head.
Though, speaking of the building of robots, I forgot to mention that when he sees the picture of his mom, that is the arm that helps build him in the birth of Bender scene.
Oh, cool. Okay. I didn't know if they kept that bit of continuity.
They did, though. They also joke about how they show him coming out fully formed as a Bender in one episode, and then in another episode they show him as a baby robot,
who then becomes it.
And then they David X. Cohen's cover for that was, well, you don't see what happens inside that machine before the fully formed Bender comes out. So, and also, I love Reverend Lionel Preacherbot. Like, he,
I forgot his name.
I had to look it up. But
was he also the robotonomy or robotology robot?
Yeah, he's,
too?
He's okay. Basically the Scientology.
What was the name
robot.
Of that fake
God
religion?
Damn it!
Sorry,
I can't
putting you on the spot.
It's
not Scientology.
But it certainly isn't. But then he just kind of became just a Christian robot, sort of. I love anytime he appears. Like, I believe that's Phil LaMarr doing the voice. And he's really good at it. Phil LaMarr, another guy who just became a cartoon voice actor, but in the late 90s wasn't exactly that.
No, he was a Mad TV guest star.
Yeah.
Cast member, and he played that UPS guy.
Yep.
And I don't remember any joke about him. I just knew that that's who Phil LaMarr was.
And he was also Marvin in Pulp Fiction.
Oh, you're right.
Shot got off. I got to interview him about Injustice 2 at San Diego Comic-Con last year. I didn't ask him one thing about Futurama. I mainly was just like, oh, yeah, you're Aquaman, you're Samurai Jack, you're Marvin. I introduced him in the video as Marvin, and I think he got a good kick out of that. I wanted him to know I was a real fan. But Tinny Tim is a surprisingly, like, made a lot of appearances in non-Xmas episodes after this, his debut episode.
When you want to do jokes about children starving and being poor, this is the best way to do it.
Abuse done to Tinny Tim is quite funny, even funnier than to poor Violet and the other kids.
Don't forget Patches.
Patches.
Yes.
Patches.
So Fry goes to Joe's Ark Pet Store, formerly Noah's Ark Shoe Store.
And that's funny.
That is a good joke.
I
didn't even notice it the first 20 times I've seen this, but... Fry is stupid, and the worst thing you can get a person for a gift is a pet that they didn't ask for and that they probably don't want.
You've given them a responsibility that over their lifetime will cost thousands of dollars.
Yes.
And will break their heart when it dies. And I like that he sees a Bongo Bunny in there,
too.
Yeah,
it is Bongo.
Yeah, it is Bongo.
Yeah,
I mean, not exactly. It is drawn in enough legally distinct way that it is not Matt Groening's
own. Oh, I think it's directly Bongo.
Oh, sure. Yes, yeah. And also, I like the background sign gag in this next clip of snake grab bag of a gift.
I didn't see that. That's awesome. Yeah. So Fry has a very important decision to make.
Just give me your best animal.
Best? Well, that's a matter of opinion. I personally like the electric snail.
That's a stupid animal. You're stupid. I said I want the best one. Now, which costs more, the parrot or the stink lizard?
The lizards are $1 each. The parrot is $500.
That's a hell of a good parrot. Although, I could get 500 lizards for the same price. Girls like swarms of lizards, right?
Sir, the store is closing in 2 minutes.
Okay, I'll take the 500 lizards. No, wait. Yes. No. Yes. Yes. Yes! The parrot!
Okay, I have to say something. As a bird owner,
yes,
I will forgive this episode. As a guy who owns a parrot and loves birds, I have to say, the way birds are used in comedy is if a bird shows up in a sitcom or a movie and it's a comedy, that bird is going to die.
They love killing birds.
They will kill a bird in a way they will never kill a cat or a dog or anything else, and it makes me mad. I love birds, and actually I was dealing with my noisy parrot while doing work this morning, so I was laughing at the squawking parrot in this episode. But even when I was 17 and watching this, I was like, that bird's going to die, because nothing's funnier than a bird dying.
Yeah, they can get away with it. Yeah. They couldn't kill a cat.
You can't kill mammals.
Yeah, but I mean, at least he dies in a funny way. But
yes, and then they eat him.
It's also funny that this bird thing comes right after we recorded 2001 Greyhounds, which has a joke about like that smart aleck bird, which of Grandpa Simpson murdering a bird, apparently. And I almost want to call it line of the show, the just Fry's response to him just earnestly saying he likes the electric snail. He's like, that's stupid. You're stupid.
Let's do it. I like how unclever and blunt it is.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, you serious? Let me laugh even harder.
That's our line of the show line. So yeah, I'll give it to that. I did bust a gut because I wasn't expecting it. It's a show with very clever, precisely written jokes, and Fry saying, that's stupid. You're stupid.
When it's purposely unclever, it's a joke unto itself. It reminds me, the ultimate version of this gag to me is in the season 4 finale, one-time final episode of Your Music's Bad and You Should Feel Bad.
Yeah, I love that.
It's one of my favorite responses to people being creative.
Yes. I think that has probably been the most persistent meme that's come out of Futurama, that Zoidberg quote.
It might be. Well, no. It's Fry staring at something.
Oh, you're right.
The Fry glare
Take my money or whatever, too.
Well, I don't know which is more. Take my money. Just shut up and take my money, or don't know if blank or blank.
Yes. Yeah. And it's always something racist when you see it online.
I would love if they had used the what-if machine to see how Leela would have reacted to 500 stink lizards.
Wow. Girls love swarms of lizards.
And just the way he keeps going like, yes, no, yes, yes. And
the parrot.
Yeah, he goes, yes, 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 while staring at the stink lizards and then saying, the parrot. And that is Frank Welker. You can tell it's Frank Welker. The second is Squawks.
Definitely Frank Welker.
Yes. And then we go back to Planet Express, where we get to see more casual nudity from both Hermes and Farnsworth. And I just love that they even That chair could be any chair, but it has to have a hole in it so you can see Fermi's butt crack.
Perfectly framing Hermie's butt crack in an era where you could still see cartoon butt cracks on television. Pre-Janet Jackson scandal.
Yeah.
I miss those days.
Janet Jackson's nipple ruined our butt cracks.
Yes, her covered nipple. Dear Lord, the children saw it.
The children, how dare they?
Nothing is more horrifying than the female body.
Yes.
Sorry I stormed out before. I didn't mean to ruin everyone's Xmas.
Huh? You were gone?
It's just that I get tired of Fry always only thinking of himself.
I hear that. I ask him to set the table. Instead, he goes out to buy you a present.
A selfish dog.
Wait, you mean he's still out? His life's in danger.
Why?
I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is coming to town.
I like how they reframe that classic line as a threat.
Very
it's an
cute.
Ominous statement,
Yeah, a cute, ominous statement.
It is weird, not to take apart the logic too much about this, but that when they tell Fry about Xmas, that robot killer Santa is not the first thing they tell him about, saying, don't leave on Xmas because you will be murdered. You think that's the most important thing? It just comes up when he's about to leave. Like, no, don't leave.
They wouldn't have any warm feelings otherwise. They're like, oh, I love Xmas, except for that murder bot that we have to hide from all day.
And I wonder if he's only limited to New York, because he's not a magical robot.
But he does live in the North Pole.
That is true.
I mean, he might have light speed technology the ability to make space move around you, as we would be finding out in a later Futurama episode.
Don't ever try to apply logic to Santa. You'll go crazy.
That's true. And so this joke about the digital clock with Fry falling off of it, again, feels like one of those, they thought of a joke that they could use any time pre-show, and then they're like, oh, this is the time to use that digital clock joke. But I also love, they can't speed it up. It has to be the full second.
The pacing is great.
Yeah.
Because your mind can put together what's going to happen next because you know what numbers look like.
Yeah, you're thinking like, wait, 7 doesn't have a thing you can hold on to. Oh, no.
It's still a great visual gag. Mm. I really love it.
And Leela does save him. And also, though, the falling reminds me, I just recently rewatched it, the last true episode of Futurama, and a major plot point of it is that Fry is trapped in a forever fall because he gets a time-traveling device that can only bring you back 30 seconds, but he fell from such a high place that he can never time-travel back to the start, to before the start of his fall. But he'll die if he doesn't go backwards.
Okay, I think a writer came up with that idea by saving their game in the wrong place.
Oh,
that's what it sounds like.
I bet you're right. Yeah. I bet you're right.
Bunch of nerds. I used to write about video games. One thing I like is that Fry saying, you just met your equal in this game of wits to the parrot. It's like,
he'll
yes.
soon be stupider than a parrot.
I think he's getting there. So Fry hooks up with Leela in the streets. Not sexually, of course. They just meet up. And unfortunately, Santa Claus arrives just in the nick of time.
Merry Xmas, Leela.
Merry Xmas.
Huh? Oh, boy! It's Santa!
Ho, ho, ho!
The slow rotation of his eyes to become evil is really great.
I love that. Yeah. I love that this terrifying Santa looks like a real, you know, Santa Claus decoration that would have been on somebody's lawn in like 1958.
Yeah.
That's what I really like about him.
And the show as a whole, I just love the retro future style.
Yeah. Though this is another thing, like Leela's secret parents, that feels different rewatching it when you know that pretty much by like the 70th episode, they're just a couple and they just stop.
Yeah.
Santa Claus's arrival is great. It is scary. His scary turn of the eyes. And that is John Goodman, who would only do this episode. It'd just be DiMaggio when it came back. They always said he was too busy, but I wonder if he was just like, I don't want to do this.
Yeah.
Like,
but to be fair, John DiMaggio is a great approximation of John Goodman, mm-hmm. where it's like barely noticeable in the next one.
Totally. And another theory of mine is John Goodman was playing real Santa Claus in multiple things already by this point.
And he had aged like being from regular fat guy to Santa Claus fat guy.
It's just like, this is damaging my ability to play Santa Claus in other things, playing your evil Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. So I got to be the good Santa Claus.
Santa Claus appraises Fry and Leela's naughty levels.
You've been very naughty, Fry and Leela. I checked my list.
We'll check it twice.
I perform over 50 mega checks per second. You're both naughty for disregarding each other's feelings.
But we set things right. Fry even risked his life to get me a present.
But what about your other co-workers? Did either of you ever stop to think about Dr. Zoidberg's feelings?
No, I swear!
Santa has something very special in his sack for you two.
Yes, Dr. Zoidberg turns out to be the most holy and pure of creatures in this episode.
Again, which doesn't really fit. This is more niceness to Zoidberg, which, again, I much prefer him being the dog everyone kicks. That's what I like about Zoidberg.
But maybe his humility makes him good and pure.
Maybe. But I also like the computer joke that Santa is constantly checking
50
his
mega checks per second.
And that the gag that they would never think of Zoidberg. It's like, no, never.
He's just looking for one way and that he can kill them, you know.
Totally.
And he kind be justified.
It just hit me now, and even when taking notes, I didn't think about it. This reminds me of, well, actually one of like dozens of Star Trek episodes, but I'm going to say Nomad, who was also parodied as Monad in episode 706 of Mystery Science Theater 2000.
Okay, yes.
But the Warhead, who is just like, I judge all of you. You are wrong. I will kill you. And then they trick him with logic, but they can't do that with Santa Claus. Santa Claus is just like, no, you're all evil by my standards. I'll find a reason to say you're bad.
There's an even better version of that joke at the end of the episode where it's like, this could be a way to get out of the situation, but we're going to show you it won't work. Yes. This could be the easiest hack way to get out, but they immediately like undercut it.
That's
great.
True. I love when the show realizes you thought of an ending and they're like, no, it's not that ending. No, no way. And, again, Santa's violence still feels a little flat to me because I never feel like Fry and Leela are ever in danger. Like, they're not going to get shot by these missiles.
You never really see him harm anyone.
No.
You know? I think in the next episode, you do see the wider world around Santa and how he affects people.
If he hurt anybody other than a parrot, I would have been like, okay.
Oh, yeah, the parrot bites it. So.
Yeah. And then I would say the darkest, as evil as they want Santa to be, the darkest joke in this episode is the robbery of Hattie McDougal.
I forgot her name. She was much less of a character.
Yes, though I love her eyes. Like, she's cat lady before cat lady, baby.
Really? Well, she's far more lucid, too.
Actually, no. The Kids News episode aired before this, so the Simpsons might have beat him to cat lady.
Yeah,
but I still love her eyes looking in different directions.
She's more of a healthier cat lady. Mm-hmm. So here is the robbery of Hattie McDougal. It sounds like a 1930s serial.
So lock the door and hit the floor, because Santa Claus comes tonight.
Go away.
Wow, hold on. How about inviting us in for a traditional glass of hard cider?
Oh, all right. But just one glass. Okay, that's enough. I said that's enough.
Get her purse!
I love the way that scene ends. The scam is over. Just steal. Yeah. And
let us inside. Now pounce on her.
Yeah. And also, how much alcohol does she have? That's like a lot of robots being filled with liquor.
I would think later times Hattie McDougal, she only has 10 kajiggers.
That's
and
right.
So she can't afford too much alcohol. But
the price of kajiggers, the value of kajiggers was very high at this point in the series.
Good. I'm remembering so many gags now. Like, I really want to someday. I can't wait for the Bonitis guy episode.
Oh, God.
That's one of the greatest.
It's relevant now more than ever.
Oh, God. If only Bonitis would stricken a lot of some people out there, I tell you. But they have a tough balance in this of having to tease Fry and Leela kissing, but also shows the imminent threat of Santa Claus. And it's just kind of, again, when we've seen Fry and Leela kiss so much, I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
It's just like, ooh, are they going to kiss? I'm like, eh.
I thought it did happen, but then I was like, oh, no, they don't let you have that moment. It's going to be like a will they, won't they thing for a bit.
They tease it, honestly, almost too long.
Yeah.
And I remember when they put out Wild Green Yonder, the last, what seemingly would have been the last Futurama until Comedy Central brought it back fully, that Matt Groening was like, look, we'll commit to them being in a relationship. We don't want to leave you guys hanging anymore.
Yeah.
And then they had to deal with four more seasons on Comedy Central of, oh, I guess they're just a couple now. Like, and we also get a cute little word play about missiles.
I like it.
Hey, look. We're under the mistletoe.
Your mistletoe is no match for my tow missile.
Your present may need some assembly.
So yeah, parrots are not that resilient, by the way. They have hollow bones. It would have went right through the parrot and killed Fry and Leela.
Yeah, it would not have stopped. It would have sliced through it. It would not cause a TOW missile to explode, which I looked it up. TOW, T-O-W missile, is a real thing, and it stands for tube-launched, optically tracked, wire-guided missile.
It'd be SLOG, then.
Well, it's funnier as a TOW missile. That's true. I guess, and it is cute wordplay. And I gotta say, I'm on Santa's side here. The robots are quite naughty.
They really are.
You've been very naughty, Bender.
What? Me? I didn't do nothing. You're thinking of the kid.
My God, Bender. Framing an orphan. That's so naughty, I'll have to add it to my list right now.
Like this.
Framing. I. N. G. N.
It takes him a long time to write every letter.
He's slow writing, and then the extra joke of Fry not realizing it's time to run away and being the last guy. And though, you know, if he has a computerized list in his head that he's constantly checking, then why does he pull out a physical list and then write down who have you been?
It's still funny. He still likes the old ways.
It's great. Yeah. I really love that joke. And he is right. Bender is quite naughty and deserves punishment.
And we get a reference to the classic O. Henry story. O. Henry, the gift of the Magi, which the Simpsons episode on this night was named after.
Amy, this is for you. A set of combs for your beautiful hair.
Oh, that's so sweet. But I sold my hair to a wig maker so I could buy a set of combs for Hermes.
Oh, the irony. I sold my hair so I could buy this third set of combs for Zoidberg.
Thank you. These will come in handy for my new hair. Finally, I look as pretty as I feel.
That's a really good joke. I forgot what the punchline was. But yeah, so the classic story, in case you don't know, it's a classic Christmas short story in which a poor couple, to get each other gifts, they kind of cancel out the gifts. So the man sells his watch to buy his girlfriend combs for her hair, like fancy combs. Mm-hmm. And the woman sells her hair to buy him a new watch fob, you know, a very popular accessory. Mm-hmm. We all have watch fobs. And then they find out the true meaning of Christmas is something. I don't know.
They have each other. True. So who cares?
What a cheap moral that is.
Yes. But instead in this, they all sell their hair, and Zoidberg bought himself hair.
When I heard the story as a kid, it kind of weirded me out. Like, you can sell your hair? I mean, I guess you can, but it's just not a normal concept to me. Like, where do you do this?
You can still sell your hair if you want. Yeah, yeah. But I think it's now seen as like, unless you need the money, like somebody who isn't in desperate need, you donate your hair for like wigs for kids or locks of love, places like that, instead of shaving it off or cutting it off and selling it for your own gain. I don't know, do they still buy real human hair at the wig store? I wonder.
I've not been to the wig store lately. In the wig district.
Oh, in the wig district.
There's a great joke. So they're all at Planet Express, and they're closing the chimney. They're closing the big door on the chimney. Yeah. I love Bender saying, use teamwork. He's just standing there not doing anything.
All four of them watching Leela and Fry push this heavy door. Yeah. It's like a robot should do. It reminded me, I thought it was in this episode for a second, the other joke of everyone trying to close it and Bender is supposedly helping, and then he says, oh, you're trying to turn it that way. And then he turns it the other way. I thought it was this one.
Yeah, I mix up the endings of the two Christmas episodes from this era a lot.
Yeah, that's true. They're very... I was waiting for a Triominoes joke at any moment there.
I come bearing Triominoes. So this is the joke I referenced earlier. Bender finds an easy solution to this problem that turns out to be not a solution at all.
You've all been very naughty. Very naughty indeed.
Except you, Dr. Zoidberg. This is for you.
A pogo stick.
As for the rest of you, I'm going to tear off your skin like wrapping paper and deck the halls with your guts.
Yeah? Well, I don't believe in Santa Claus. Come on, everybody. If you don't believe in him, he can't hurt you. Oh, God, the pain!
That is such a great Futurama-style joke where you're immediately stopped and dead in your tracks and shown the error of your ways almost instantly.
Even saying out loud, like, he can't hurt us. Oh, God, the pain.
Yes, and that's great. This actually reminds me a lot. I know they're not making fun of this directly, but it reminds me a lot of the ending of the first Nightmare on Elm Street movie where it has that very pat ending. It's like, no, you don't have power over me, Freddy. I don't believe in you. And he's like, no. And it's the worst ending for a great movie. And then it's like, it doesn't make any sense to me. It never has. If you know how that, if you know why that movie makes sense in the end, please tell me, because I think it sucks, the ending.
I've kind of erased that ending from my memory. I just remember the good
but
times.
It's like, that is just, there is really no logical way to get out of the Freddy Krueger problem. So they just make that up. It's like, I don't believe in you anymore, Freddy.
Yeah. In other times, they have to just say, well, we found, it turns out Freddy attacks dozens of teenagers who have mental psychic abilities. So,
not the rapper, psychic abilities.
Psychic ability. Another thing that does fall flat for me in this episode is there's some of their Santa puns, like, his stomach is shaking like a bowl full of nitroglycerin. I was like,
it's a little sweaty. Yeah. It's a little sweaty. I didn't care for the Santa surface, the Santa missile with jolly seeking whatevers. Yeah, it
wasn't too a fan of
you
that.
You don't need to turn every Christmas thing into a Futurama joke.
And then there is a rare time where Zoidberg saves the day. What about Zoidberg?
Yes, he clips the Christmas lights so Santa is electrocuted, which is a very easy solution. Like, just get a small amount of voltage running through Santa.
Yeah, just any. There has to be a gun in this future where you can shoot electricity at somebody.
One of the cops in this world could just fire a stun gun at Robot Santa. Your problem is solved.
Well, you know, they only have those laser batons. Which,
that's right.
Great, great joke. I love those cop jokes, honestly. Like, from the first episode, but again, a joke ruined by every commercial. It's what hurt the pilot for me watching it as a kid. I was just like, as a 17-year-old kid, yeah, I know, you like, I've seen this baton joke 500 times.
What was the
already.
Baton joke? I forget.
That the cops pull out their batons and they seem to be lightsabers, and then they're just solid light.
Yeah,
hitting,
that's right. And it just sounds like a plastic bat.
Yes, yeah. Which,
and doesn't the black robot cop have a bigger baton?
Yes.
I thought
He does have a bigger baton. I like the increasing jokes that he's like, I'm getting a promotion. And I was like, I'll get hired back to the force. I'm like, so you're posing as a police officer now?
They're crooked cops. So it turns out to be a Merry Xmas for everyone.
Look, the food isn't what's important.
I'm so hungry.
The important thing is we're all together for Xmas. And even though I'm surrounded by robots and monsters and old people, I've never felt more at home.
Hear, hear. Now let's all of us shut up and sing.
He knows when you are sleeping.
He knows when you're on the can.
He'll hunt you down and blast your ass from here to Pakistan.
Oh. You better not breathe. You better not move.
You're better off dead, I'm telling you, dude.
Santa Claus is gunning you down.
Yay! Yay!
Merry Xmas, everyone!
We missed the part where they ate the parrot, and I love the Bender line. I found it lying in the street like all the food I cook.
Yes, yeah. I'd forgotten the running gag of Bender wanting to be a cook even though he has no taste buds and thus makes only garbage. And happily admits he serves people garbage all the time. That's what he just does.
Why would you trust Bender to cook a meal for you?
And it's helpful that Nibbler, I have to think, when you know that Nibbler is not an animal but a thinking, very smart person, you're like, oh, okay, then you're intentionally eating this to save people from having to eat garbage.
I didn't read it that way, but now I do. And the final shot of the professor taking off all his clothes again.
Yes.
It's a great, like, subversion of a Christmas episode. I just love the old
him to just turn and show his butt.
Yeah.
And just like, now you're going to see him naked one last time. His wrinkly old body that looks like Ronald Reagan's neck, as Charles Napier
would
put it.
Yeah, just like Doris. And we get so back in the 90s, there often used to be additional scenes over the credits. Now, the next show starts while the previous show's credits are running, but before they would often have a cut scene or a new scene at the end, and here is
that way you'd stay for one more commercial break.
Yeah, and in this one, there's no joke here, but it's just saying
it's
Santa
kind
Claus
of a joke
a bit.
I'll be back when you least expect it. Next Xmas, ho, ho, ho!
And he was right. He comes back in 2 years.
But the joke is like, of course you'd expect Santa Claus to come back on Xmas. That's the gag.
That's the joke.
You would least expect it. The day I always come. Like,
okay. Man,
so
that was so subtle, I didn't even read it as a joke. Just like, I thought they were just like, yeah, he's coming back, kids. Like, wait for the Robot Santa next time.
And on the commentary for the episode, I remember, I haven't listened to the commentary in 15 years probably, but John DiMaggio says, no, you won't be back. I'll be playing you.
That's right. I wanted to hear the commentary for this, but my DVDs didn't come in time, but I probably heard it like 7 times because these commentaries and Simpsons commentaries were my podcast before podcasts. I've heard them over and over and over and over again.
Great times, though. Podcasts are awesome too. to. I wouldn't trade podcasts for more audio commentaries.
It's true. There's only so many audio commentaries, but podcasts are infinite.
And also, we wouldn't make money off of other people making audio commentaries.
That's true. Where's our cut of this racket?
But this was a fun episode. I think the only thing that really hurts it is just that I know there are better Xmas episodes to follow it. And I really love The Tale of Two Santas quite a lot. And I hope we get to do it someday.
Yeah, and I wasn't sure if I was weary of Futurama, but watching this and doing this episode made me think, like, no, I could do a lot more of these. In fact, I think the issue with me was I saw it way too much on Adult Swim when I had cable. It was on every day, often twice, and I just got burnt out on the four seasons that existed then. And I was just like, no more. Take my DVDs away, please. No more. But now, like, I don't know, 10 years later, it's great to come back to this and be like, yeah, let's get into Futurama again.
Yeah, and you may have your choice. If you're listening to this when this episode first came out, we might have a vote for what show we're going to do next very soon. And it could be Futurama. Ooh. Could be King of the Hill.
Could be something else. If you want to make Bob happy, we will eventually do Futurama at some point, but I really want to do King of the Hill.
Yeah, well, it's up to you.
Not to throw all this work we just did under the bus, but
we already set up what the whole feel would be for the next show.
Hey, no. Now we're talking about King of the Hill. No. Pick with your heart. Choose with your heart. I'll be happy to do either one, and if we do one, we'll eventually do the other. So,
totally. Yeah. But I want to wish all you listeners a Merry Xmas, and thank you very much for listening and sticking with us throughout this whole year, or if you just signed up for it. Bob, I want to thank you for saying we should do a holiday episode and all the stuff you
do. I'm glad you're on board with it.
Totally.
Even more. We've been on like a nonstop podcast bender, mm-hmm. getting all this stuff ready because Henry's leaving.
No pun intended.
Oh, God. Chris left. And so we're just getting a lot of stuff prepped, and this is just one extra thing, but Henry gladly agreed to do it, and I love Christmas episodes, and also check out the Retronauts one we just put up. Mm-hmm. It should be up by the time you hear this, I hope. I have a lot of work left to do on it, but I love doing it, so please praise me for it in the future.
Or praise us on Twitter, where I'm HENEREYG.
Yes, and I am Bob Servo, and you know me, but thank you so much for supporting us all throughout the year. I'm so excited to put a bow on this year and get started in 2018 and maybe take a week off to rest my vocal cords. But thank you so much for listening, folks.
And happy Xmas!
That's whatever you were talking about for you.